Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli. Information at bloomingfoods.coop and goodsforcooks.com. Online at goodsforcooks.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Real food, green living.
Real food, green living.
Earth Eats.
Earth Eats.
Hi, folks. I'm Annie Corrigan. We took a little break from the podcast these past couple weeks to record some new recipes and interviews that we're pretty excited about. But we're back in the saddle today, celebrating one of the last remaining reminders of summer, corn. But first, here's Liz Leslie, the new head of the Earth Eats News Department, with a look at this week's news.
It's been all food recalls all the time these past few weeks. The biggest news comes from a Colorado farm, where a listeria outbreak linked to cantaloupes has claimed 13 lives and sickened 72 others. As a result, this outbreak is being called the deadliest in a decade, and experts expect the number of victims to rise in the coming days. Listeria is especially nasty because, unlike other foodborne pathogens, it can flourish on food stored in the refrigerator. In this case, it was most likely passed from knives used to cut fruit. On the other side of the food spectrum, ground beef has also been at the top of the recall list lately. Palo Duro Meat of Amarillo, Texas, issued a recall of 40,000 pounds of beef after a sample tested positive for E. coli. According to the USDA's Food and Safety Inspection Service, the meat had been inadvertently shipped to six Georgia school districts due to a tracking error that allowed it to leave the warehouse. Luckily, there have been no reports of tainted meats being served or consumed in school lunches. And most recently, the Kansas firm Tyson Fresh Meats recalled 131,000 pounds of ground beef that was possibly contaminated with E. coli. Tyson issued the recall after a family in Ohio became ill consuming tainted beef found in their home. The meat has been shipped to 14 states, including Indiana, Tennessee, North and South Carolina, and Ohio. You can read more about these recalls and get the latest in food news from our website, eartheats.org. And be sure to keep an eye on our Twitter feed and our Facebook page. Just search for Earth Eats. For Earth Eats, I'm Liz Leslie.
Before we start cooking, let's visit a corn farm. Even though corn growers in the Midwest planted more acres this year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says yields have been hurt by droughts in some places and floods in others. The department's revised forecast sent commodity prices soaring because demand for corn and other grains seems to be insatiable. Harvest Public Media's Kathleen Masterson visited a farm near Des Moines, Iowa, where they're growing a near-record crop of what investors seem to be treating as the new gold.
On a recent sun-beaten afternoon, I'm traveling with two corn buyers from Heartland Co-op in Des Moines to Vernon Flynn's farm just outside of town. They're visiting to check the crop's progress. For a more accurate estimate, you need to check the corn away from the edge of the field. So we wrestle our way through the towering 7-foot corn stalks, shielding our faces to keep from being cut by the sharp leaves. Yeah. Flynn twists off an ear of corn to examine how the heat has damaged it.
That one there is kind of a nose back, probably due to dry weather. This here is probably 16 rows around, and it looks like there's probably 4 or 5 kernel rows right there in that row that's aborted or will not fill.
Still, when they measure the ears and count kernels back at the pickup, Flynn estimates a pretty decent crop, about 170 bushels per acre, compared to 153 projected nationally. Farmers planted far more acres of corn this year, so even though flooding and drought lowered yield per acre estimates, harvest time could still bring a good-sized haul. But demand from the ethanol industry, livestock feed, and export market continues to outstrip yield projections, says Iowa State University economist Chad Hart, and that sent grain prices soaring.
When you looked last summer, we had corn prices, in some cases, down around $3.50 a bushel. Now we're up in the $6 to $7 range, so we've seen nearly a doubling of prices, if you will, over that past 15 months.
The USDA report suggests that grain prices will stay elevated over the next year or so. Corn stockpiles are nearing a 15-year low, and soybean stockpiles have been tight for at least 4 years. And in the last few months, another player has taken a bite out of the U.S. corn market.
China's been a very early buyer of the corn crop we're growing now. And so they've already, if you will, put in some advanced purchases. And that's been something that has got the market a little worked up right now.
China bought some 21 million bushels from the U.S. in July, its biggest purchase in 15 years. Now, high grain prices are usually good news for farmers. They help Vernon Flynn buy a new tractor. But today's even higher prices mean even higher stakes. And Flynn says selling in this volatile market comes with risks.
I mean, you're kind of scared to sell it for fear you're going to miss the rally. And you're scared if you don't sell it for fear we're going to say, oh, heck, we should have sold it all last time.
Driving his truck over to the next cornfield, Flynn and corn buyers Nick Hyde and Ron Grosskreutz discuss what every farmer struggles with: enormous swings in the market.
It was a lot more fun when corn was $3 and it would move, maybe the limit was 10 cents. And if it moved 10 cents in a day, you know, that was huge.
When I got in the business, if it moved a nickel in a day, were looking for a meteorite.
And now they're saying corn is average this year, is this right, Ron? 22 or 23
from
cents a day?
A day
in a move?
Yep.
Well, unheard of.
And more traders are betting not just on gold and precious metals, but on agricultural commodities as a hedge against volatile and uncertain stock markets. They're speculating on corn prices for years to come. Money in corn futures is five times what it was in 2004, according to numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That's a nearly $2 trillion market for corn alone. Farmers and traders alike are getting pretty worked up over the possibility of $8 a bushel corn. But for consumers, this market frenzy translates into higher food prices. Grocery items that rely heavily on grains, like meat, butter, eggs, are likely to keep going up. And much of it traces back to corn, which may just be the emerging gold standard of agricultural commodities. I'm Kathleen Masterson, Harvest Public Media.
Read more from the folks at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Three different chefs today will be preparing three different recipes using corn. First up, it's David Wade.
Again, when it comes to like any kind of these kind of soups, prep is like the thing. It's prep. Just took fresh corn, got it, get it going here. We have whole cilantro. You don't have to chop it because it's going to go in a blender. Yay! Green onions in the blender. Yay! Some cayenne. You know, this is going to be up to your taste. The cumin.
Freshly ground this morning.
Oh, yeah. Even better. The avocados. It's probably the hardest thing to deal with. If you've never dealt with an avocado, you can cut right around the pit like that. Twist open. That part's done. That's easy. Because what you're going to do is you're going to plop them out into the blender and just blend all this stuff up. Avocados always need salt. I'm sorry. I'm just one of those people. Whenever you make salsa or guac or whatever, it always needs salt. Veg stock or chicken stock. It doesn't matter which. As long as you can open the container. Lime juice to really give it a good... Woo! Did you get squirted?
You squirted me, David.
I'm sorry. Easy now. You know, it kind of is like guac, but you don't have all the green pepper and all that kind of stuff. You can ice this down. You don't want to let it sit too long because it's going to start turning a little brown on you. That's why we add the lime juice. The citric acid really keeps that from happening, and it also adds a great ton of flavor. I started thinking about this a few days ago, since there's so much cream in this. Would this work in a whipped cream dispenser? Wouldn't that be interesting if you could like actually make a mousse or foam, something out of it? Because I think it would be really kind of cool. In this pan, we're going to use basically the same types of flavors. We're going to put in the corn, the scallions, we're going to put in a little bit of the cilantro, not much, and more of the spices to get that toasty. Is what you're basically doing is you're kind of toasting this up. The corn will become very sweet, very fragrant, and that's what you're going for. So you're going for more of a smell than a doneness. One of the key things I've learned in a kitchen when you're cooking is get your food in the pan and walk away. I mean, not walk away, but leave it. Don't touch it. Let it cook. Yes, it's not doing you any good. It makes you feel good, but it's not really getting that crust that it needs. Now we have, I can start to smell this, and it's starting to stick a little bit to the bottom of the pan, which is fine, because that's the sugars are coming out. Notice what was not in here. What ingredient was not in here, which absolutely blows me away? Garlic. Uh-huh. Not one chunk of garlic in this recipe. which was really bizarre to me, but it doesn't need it. I thought garlic had to go in everything. You don't want a lot of this. This is extremely rich stuff. So a small serving. And what you do is you basically are going to be putting the corn in on top. It's like a garnish. If you wanted to, you can kind of reverse this. Make more of a broth soup with corn here. Add a little bit of the avocado cream as the garnish. So you reverse the soup. What we're going to do is give you guys little cups. And I'll be doing like shooters. Okay? So I'm going to put a little bit of corn in, a little bit of soup in. We'll be doing it that way.
See a photo of this dish and check out the recipe on our website, eartheats.org. Chef Bob Atkins is now manning the grill for our second recipe. He'll be making a Mexican crema that's tasty enough to spoon over just about anything. This is a great way to enjoy the final few ears of fresh corn from the market.
Okay, so we're going to start with about a half cup of sour cream. A half cup of mayonnaise. You can use, you know, regular mayonnaise. You could use light mayonnaise if you want, no fat mayonnaise. In that, we're going to put some grated Parmesan, some fresh grated Parmesan right off the giant wheel. Garlic chili paste. It's the red sriracha style stuff. If you don't have the chili paste, you can use sriracha. About a half lime juiced into there also. A little bright citrus note. We're going to use some cilantro, very classic Central American Mexican herb. Take a whisk to it. This is going to add a really rich, rich coating to your grilled corn, which should be getting pretty close. And I don't know if you can hear it or not.
That's popping. The corn is popping.
It is popping. And it's okay if you get a little charred on one side. You just leave it out. It balances out on the other side. You just want to get some nice color to it. Like I said, if you've steamed in advance, you just want to get a little bit of the caramelization to it. You can get it as dark as you want, or you can leave it as light as you want. It also burns off a lot of those little hairs that might have slipped through your fingers during the shucking process. Okay, so we're going to spoon a little bit over the top, and that is your Mexican-style grilled corn.
Let us know how you use this sauce, over corn or over veggies or fish. Write a comment on the post at eartheats.org. Now that we've eaten all the kernels off the corn, time to address the cobs. And no, we're not just going to throw them in the compost. Chef Orr will be making a jelly out of these used cobs, and we're going to serve it over top of some of my absolute favorite things.
Oh, folks, Grandma's biscuits.
Grandma's biscuits, but even more important, my cousin Jane's corn cob jelly. Now, you know, you really can make things with almost anything, and corn cob jelly is the perfect foil for making wonderful breakfast jelly. It could even be used on pancakes or waffles or anything else you'd like.
So literally, you take the kernels off?
Well, it's the dried corn, and you want to select the red, the ones that have the red interior. So it'll be the red corn cobs. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you just boil them and you make like a tea. Now, the same thing can be done with sassafras roots or hickory bark, and you can just make this kind of intense tea. And then you add lots of sugar to it, and then you add your pectin or sure gel. All right, and so I'll open this up for you, and you can take a look at it. To me, it tastes almost like apple jelly. And back in the day, you know, you didn't have, you know, at a certain time of the year, when late winter came, if you ran out of your apple jelly, you still wanted to have something to kind of stick to your ribs.
Sure.
And the corn cob jelly was a perfect thing.
This is a beautiful amber color, too.
Right. And the other thing that I do that my cousin Jane doesn't do is I add a couple spices. I add some star anise, and I add some cinnamon sticks. You could add a little crushed peppercorn, a little pinch of salt, and that's going to really make the flavor vibrant. So here is the corn cob jelly. You can see it's clear and beautiful. I'll give you a little bit of Grandma's biscuits.
These biscuits, I'm so happy to see them back in the kitchen. These are the best things.
Okay, and that's the classic version. Here is a big tub of our version that we use at the restaurant. You can see right in here, mm-hmm. You can see the star anise and the cinnamon sticks floating around. And we make it just a little bit thinner so we can kind of spoon it over fruits and use it almost as a syrup.
This is really tasty, but I can see why adding the star anise and the cinnamon would help. It would just add a little bit more interest to the flavor. This is really mild.
Right. It has a touch of lemon in it, and yeah. It does. To me, it almost tastes like a mild apple jelly.
Yeah.
I'll have you taste a little bit of this with the spices in it.
Oh, yeah.
With the spices, it just adds a little bit more of that mystery flavor.
That's delicious.
So when you drive by those cornfields after the combine's gone through and you see those red cobs out there, grab some and go home and make some corn cob jelly, and your late winter will be even sweeter.
You can print all the recipes from today's episode from our website, join the conversation on our blog, and check out even more recipes from our various contributors. Most recently, a recipe for baba ganoush from Sarah Conrad. That's all at eartheats.org. Thanks to Liz Leslie and Sarah Gordon for writing news stories. Thanks to chefs Daniel Orr, Bob Adkins, and David Wade for making food. Thanks to Abon Binder and Sia Africa for tending the website. And thanks to all of you for liking good, local, sustainable food and for listening today. I'm Annie Corrigan. See you next time.